big announcement from Apple and EMI.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. EMI, the world's third largest record label, is holding a joint news conference with Apple in London this morning. Speculation is mounting that the two companies could be about to unveil a new deal on downloadable music. From London, Stephen Beard reports.
Both companies are refusing to comment ahead of today's news conference, but both have indicated something major is in the offing. That could well mean the two sides have done a deal over the contentious issue of digital rights management. This is the system under which record labels use software to prevent their downloadable music from being copied and distributed for free. In effect, it means the customer can only play the music on one kind of portable player, like an iPod. Apple has benefited hugely from the system, but the company argues it's unfair on consumers and has called on the big three record labels to drop it. If EMI says yes today, other labels could follow suit. The online music business, already growing fast, could really take off. Analysts also expect another groundbreaking deal today. EMI is thought likely to finally allow the Beatles' back catalogue, the most valuable in pop music history, to be downloaded legally for the first time. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Down to the wire. After 9 months of talks, the U.S. and South Korea have agreed to a trade deal just minutes before the deadline. This is the biggest trade deal signed by the U.S. since the North American trade agreement 15 years ago. Both countries have agreed to lower trade barriers for industrial goods and services. Asian markets were mixed at the close of business today. Let's take a look at Wall Street. It's a new week and a new quarter for investors. The Dow will start the day at 12,354. The Nasdaq will start at 2421. And the S&P is at 1420. There's a lot of buzz about a big deal in the works. The leveraged buyout firm Kohler Kravis Roberts is buying First Data Corporation, that's the world's largest processor of credit card payments, for $29 billion. That makes this deal the second largest leveraged buyout so far this year, behind the proposed $31 billion takeover of TXU Corporation. A new program that starts today in Ohio will give some homeowners with unaffordable mortgages a second chance. State-backed bonds will provide a pool of refinancing money. The Ohio Housing Finance Agency says broad fallout from the weak economy and a statewide foreclosure crisis has forced its hand. Marketplace's Steve Tripoli has a story.
With the nation's highest rate of homes in foreclosure, the worry in Ohio goes beyond individual losses. Rita Perez of the Ohio Housing Finance Agency says communities across the state have high numbers of vacant homes already.
What's going to happen to those homes? What's going to become of those buildings? Are they just going to sit there, or are they going to become places that are magnets for crime?
A cycle of community unraveling is feared. Perez says Ohio's high number of risky subprime mortgages played a role.
There is no question, in addition to having a very challenged economy, when you overlay that with very risky lending practices, that you increase the opportunities for failure.
The agency has set aside $100 million for these refinancing bonds, but Perez says officials are open to going higher. Homeowners can apply starting today through the finance agency's statewide lending partners. I'm Steve Tripoli for Marketplace.
Is a subprime mortgage mess personal to you, to your work or neighborhood? Help us tell the story at marketplace.org.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management, Mellon.com. And by the important new book, Speaking of Faith, by public radio host Krista Tippett, in bookstores everywhere now. Sustainability coverage supported by Calvert, mutual funds, college savings, and retirement investments in companies committed to responsible environmental, social, and governance practices, Calvert.com.
As Jewish people all over the world sit down to celebrate Passover this evening, they may think of relatives who live or once lived on a kibbutz in Israel. But the image and reality of the kibbutz has changed since the movement began in the early 20th century. At that time, everything was communal, and no one was supposed to have more than his neighbor. But as more younger people abandon these communities, older members have had to make some big changes. Shia Levitt reports.
In the early socialist kibbutz, there was a deal. Each person worked according to his ability, without a salary, and the kibbutz gave him everything he needed in return, from food to medical care to housing. The system relied on younger members to run the kibbutz and care for the elderly. In a way, the youth were the pension plan. Then an economic crisis and other problems hit the kibbutz, says economist Amir Hellman.
In one kibbutz, it was very famous, suddenly all the young people left and the kibbutz is bankrupt. They have cows and the agriculture, but they could not work. They were old and they could not buy food.
For the past 20 years, about 50% of the youth have left the kibbutz. National membership has declined by more than a fourth.
People in many kibbutzim said, this could happen even in our kibbutz, that we become very old and no one cares for us.
In the mid-1990s, many kibbutzim started small pension accounts as safety nets, one for each member. When the kibbutz switched to a free market system in 2000, members started to get their own salaries and became responsible for contributions to their own personal pensions. On kibbutz El Amot in northern Israel, Esti Rosen sits outside on her front porch. She says if there were no pension fund when she and her husband retire, they would only have a social security check.
You get something from the state. It's not enough to yet live. And then when you get a pension, all together it's going to be okay for everyone, I hope.
Although everyone's glad to have some pension money, guaranteed, some folks fear it won't be enough. Anita Habib worked for more than three decades, but she never opened a bank account or used a credit card until the kibbutz privatized. As she unloads milk, hummus, and pita bread from her grocery bags, she says, the new system is great for people with high salaries.
I mean, I at the moment am out of work, and I can't afford to put it into the pension fund as well. I mean, you know, I have to buy stuff in the supermarket and got to live. So it's like a low priority. It becomes a very low priority.
But Anita still prefers having a pension instead of the old system, which she feared might not have been around to provide for her at all. In northern Israel, I'm Shia Levitt for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Mark Austin Thomas. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.